Portsmouth Community Radio.
Down by the Sally Gardens, my love and I did meet. She passed the Sally Gardens,
my love and I did meet. She passed the Sally Gardens with little snow white feet. She
folks, this is Steve Carrigan, and you are listening to Local Folk. And as per usual, when I have a guest on my program, I sometimes like to play something that indicates who or what that guest may or may not do. And I have to say that I think I have a very special guest right now, but I also have to say that even though you can't tell because of radio magic, my guest is not in the studio yet, but she'll be here really soon, and I'm very excited to have her on. But first, before we get into who my guest is and why I just played three versions of the same song, before I can share with you, shed some light on that mystery, I guess I will give you the weather. And I will say that in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, the computer says that it is mostly cloudy out and that it's 54 degrees Fahrenheit. Humidity's 57%. Southwest 6 mph winds. All right. Visibility 10 miles. I can't see that far, but that's what they're saying. Slight chance of showers tonight. A slight chance of showers after 3 a.m. Mostly cloudy and with a low around 43, southeast wind around 6 miles per hour, becoming calm in the evening. Chance of precipitation is 20%. Tuesday, a chance of showers, once again, cloudy, with a high near 55, northeast wind 5 to 8 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 40%. New precipitation amounts between a tenth and a quarter of an inch possible. And Tuesday night, a chance of showers, mainly before 11 p.m. Mostly cloudy with a low around 46. North wind around 7 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 30%. And new precipitation amounts of less than a tenth of an inch possible. All right, well, it looks like there's a chance that it could be rainy. It's probably going to be cloudy. It's going to be in the 50s and 40s. And autumn is on its way. Hey, I've got some underwriting that I'd like to share with you right now. Programming on Portsmouth Community Radio is made possible by you, our members, and by Daystar Computer Services, offering business-class technology services designed to meet each client's needs. Information at daystarinc.com. We also get support from Coast, serving the Seacoast region of New Hampshire and Berwick, Maine, with safe and affordable bus transportation since 1982. Find routes, schedules, and learn how to ride at coastbus.org. I have another one. I always get to choose what that is, but I'll do that one a little bit later. I'd like to share with you all what's going on in the Seacoast area. And I'll tell you what, there's something called the Scarecrow's Ball. It's Portsmouth Community Radio and Scarecrows of the Port. And they're having their inaugural Scarecrow's Ball, and it is Saturday, October 20th, 2012, at the VFW Hall. Trying to read the sign here. It's on Deer Street. Doors open at 7:30 p.m. And dance to the music of Granite Planet with special guests One Step Up. Come as you are or as a scarecrow. And there will be prizes for the best traditional scarecrow, most unique scarecrow, best dancing scarecrow, and raffle prizes. Hopefully, if you get a prize for being a scarecrow, you actually tried to dress up like a scarecrow. Tickets are $10 and are available at Mainly New Hampshire. That's on 22 Deer Street in Portsmouth, or online at scarecrowsoftheport.org. All right, that is going to be a good time. All righty. There's lots of things going on in the Portsmouth area. And let's see. Well, we've got our beekeeping school. I've mentioned that before. I'll mention it again. Beekeeping school is offered by Seacoast Beekeepers Association. It's on Wednesdays, and looks like the next one will be just in a few days, Wednesday, October 10th. But it's also on the 17th, 24th, 31st, and November 7th, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Jeremiah Smith Grange in Lee, New Hampshire. Boy, you know, they just don't name them like they used to. The Jeremiah Smith Grange in Lee. Some topics addressed will be honeybee biology, equipment, hive management, pests, and diseases. And the cost of $75 includes class text and a one-year membership to the association, which meets monthly in Lee. Pre-registration is required. So for more information, contact Carol at ctuvison at C-T-U-V-E-S-O-N at msn.com or 603-750-0137. Also, I wanted to let you know that it looks like this Thursday, October 11th, at Prescott Park will be the Kruger Brothers. Some call it jazz, some call it classical, some call it bluegrass. Certainly, the music of the Kruger Brothers is all of that and more. And at the end of the day, when you have the legendary Doc Watson singing your praise, you knew you're doing something correctly. Since their formal introduction to American audiences in 1997, the Kruger Brothers' remarkable facility with their instruments and unique take on the American songbook has made them a fixture within the world of acoustic music. Quote unquote, the Krugers are nothing short of magnificent. And that is from Bluegrass Journal. Unique take on the American songbook. Boy, you know, I was just playing a song from what is called the English songbook. It was an album, and the title of that album was The English Songbook, and it was by a guy named Ian Bostrich, and it was an art song. So, my guest is here, so now I can reveal, with perfect timing as well, because I just what did I just do? Oh, I just finished all my announcements and everything else that goes along with doing this. But what I did was I played three versions of the same song. The first version was the Makeham and Clancy Brothers, and it was the Sally Garden, all right? And then the next one was the Sally Garden again, but by a woman singer who obviously has done some studying. Her name Orla Fallon. And the last one was by a fellow named Ian Bostridge. And he did it on an album called The English Songbook. It was the first time that I had heard the Sally Garden, and it was also the first time that I had been introduced to something called an art song. And which brings me to, I did this succession because these people had more and more book learning, so to speak, or they basically had more practice with their voice. And, you know, people practice their guitars, and, you know, I've had lots of guests on here that give lessons in instruments, but I really haven't had anybody that focused on the voice, and I myself am a singer, so it hasn't made total sense that I haven't had someone who is a voice coach. But if you do have interest in singing or anything like that, you either have an ear for it, or maybe you have an ear for it, or you don't, or I don't know what. We're going to find out if that even makes a difference, but I have Terry Ilaria on the program right now. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm so glad that you came in. This is our pre-interview because I am going to come visit you to talk about my own voice. So now we don't have to talk quite as much off the air.
Exactly.
We could talk right here. So Terry has been performing all over the place and for many years. She's a soprano. I haven't even gotten to her music because I want to hear her talk about it. But she's a high soprano.
Yes.
Is that what they call it? Okay, a high soprano. She, like the person that taught me how to sing, has been a soloist in The Messiah.
Yes.
Yes. And the person that taught me how to sing, or up to where I'm at right now, is a fellow named Bruce McIntyre, and he was what was called a bel canto singer at one point. Mm-hmm. Is that similar to, that's sort of like opera, right?
Yes. Probably that's the easiest way of describing it. Bel canto means beautiful singing.
Beautiful singing.
So, and definitely of the classical variety. And The Messiah is probably one of the most well-known, even amongst non-musicians, because every Christmas, just about, there are many places that have what are known as The Messiah Sing. So you can go either with music of your own, or they'll have scores, the musical book that you can borrow, and they have soloists and an orchestra, and so the audience becomes the chorus.
They become the chorus. If I went, though, I'd just be wanting to go, hallelujah. I mean,
that's fine.
You know, and I would just have to wait for that part.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, there's so many people who, it's like a yearly tradition. There are a lot of people that know every single note of the music, and so you really can get swept up in it. And the a lot of the chorus sections of The Messiah have very repetitive sections. Beautiful. I'm not saying repetitive in a bad way. So that you really can pick up as you go along. And Even if you don't really read music, if you have the music in front of you, you can sort of see just the landscape of the music, how it goes up and down.
Yeah, the landscape. This, yeah. I think some people can sort of read through the... I mean, yeah. I tell you what, when I the one time that happens to me often is... I haven't been recently, but
church.
Forgive me, Lord, I have not been. But I'll tell you what, when I sit down and try to sing, you do see the landscape. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you teach people, or
yes.
Do they notice it, or do they?
Well, some people do. Some people want to really understand how to read music. Other people sort of just want to sing. And the actual learning how to read music, it's a long process. If you really want to know what you're doing. For example, I come from a very musical family. I'm one of four children. We sang together with my parents and I'm the youngest of four, so I grew up surrounded by music and harmony. So I could hear a lot. And I got by very well with that until I went to college, and they said, yeah, that's all well and good, but do you know what you're doing? And I said, well, I can just hear it. I can see it. And they go, well, if you're going to teach... That's not good enough. So I had to back up, and you've all heard the song from The Sound of Music, Do A Deer. Those are the syllables of the scale, Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, Do. And I had to back up and learn how to read everything using those syllables. And so it was really like starting from scratch, because I could look at it, I could see it, I could hear it, I could sing it, but if I couldn't do the right syllable, that's not being a good teacher.
That's not being a good teacher.
Yeah.
Not for in a classical sense.
Right? No, no. I mean, just because I could do it, but if I want to share that skill or help you learn how to read, me just pointing to it and go, here's what it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
But you back up and learn all of the scales and the theory behind it, then you can look at it and go, oh, of course, that's what that interval sounds like.
So it was so sort of, you were so surrounded by it. It was so ubiquitous in your growing mm-hmm. up that...
Yep.
That it when you got to college, it was almost like, oh, wait a minute, there's
more to it than that.
There's more to it than this. Hey, I want to listen to a piece from this Messiah, and then we'll talk. We will talk about that in just a moment. Yeah, we'll
do. And it picks up there is an it's a string background, a string orchestra. It was a live performance 20 something years ago, mm-hmm. and it picks up at the end of the introduction. Don't add up.
Sheesh. So I was looking at it. Well, you're the one that said it. I don't know.
And again, it is a live performance, so it has, you know, background noise and whatnot. But this is a not well known part of the Messiah. Everybody knows the Alleluia chorus. There are other very popular ones. This is actually the next to the last piece of the entire work right before the Amen.
Oh.
And it's not what I auditioned for, but that's what he assigned me, and so I learned it.
Yeah, but that's great.
Oh, okay. For me, it was much more enjoyable than just doing one of the ones that I've known all my life. So this, I, again, had to start from square one and learn it, but it was a lot of fun.
Brand new challenge. Okay, here we have it. This is an air from Handel's yeah. Messiah, performed with the Granite State Choral Society. It is a live performance. Okay, sign me up.
Well, you're already scheduled for Wednesday, so you're signed up.
Yeah, but honestly, you know, this kind of music sounds incredibly complicated. It must have taken you years. I mean, you grew up with it. What did your folks do? Were they just always singing casually, or were they professional musicians? Or
they had actually met in church choir.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
and our family, that actually was the they met in church choir, and again, being the fourth, there was a whole family repertoire going before I came along, and we had a lot of family songs that we did, and a lot of them were church oriented, not the real heavy duty hymns, but you know, oh, there is joy, 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 you know, that kind of thing. But we sang it as a family and all in harmony, and we had what we refer to as the car songs. We every summer would spend with our grandparents, but it was a 12-hour drive to get to their place in Canada. What do you do with six people in a car for 12 hours? We sang.
See, nowadays I think they just stick a DVD on in the
right
back.
It was just completely different.
No DVD in the back of my car. Try to sing.
That's right.
Car songs. I thought you said Carter songs. Like Carter, like the Carter family or something. You ever do any Carter family songs?
Not that I know of.
Oh, okay.
No, it was the Meyer Choir, we called it. Our last name was Meyer, so we had the Meyer Choir.
I like that. The Meyer Choir with your car songs and mostly church. I learned a little bit about singing from church. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend if somebody wants to go learn how to sing, as long as they don't mind singing about God.
Okay. Know? And I there's mean, no harm in that.
Yeah, I know, really. You know, yeah. So.
And we were also in church choir. All of us were in church choir throughout our all of our upbringing. And then I went to music school, to college. So
Elvis was in church choir.
Hey, it's not a bad thing.
No, I'll tell you what. You know, although they're trying to get me to join, I didn't wind up joining our own church choir. But anyways, enough of this. That's another story for another day. But so you'd been performing in choirs, and you decided that you wanted to. You've been teaching music for since you got out of college?
Yes.
Okay, so you've wanted to be a teacher.
I always knew that. I'm not sure why, but I started playing the piano at age 4 by ear.
Okay.
And actually only had a couple of years of a piano study in elementary school, but then I wanted to be in band, so I took clarinet. But again, being one of 4 kids, we weren't, you know, it wasn't like now you have 17 sports, 3 different instruments. So, but I kept playing the piano, and that's where I got a skill, which is called sight reading, mm-hmm. where basically I can pick up something and play it.
Oh, great.
Which is a fabulous skill just for your own enrichment, but also as a voice teacher, if we're trying out new music, I can pretty much, I'm sure you could stump me, you know,
well, yeah.
But as a general rule, whatever someone brings to me, I can play it. And I've had actually, I've done a lot of musical theater, music directing shows and then playing for the shows. And a lot of the actors and actresses have actually come to me for coaching, maybe not so much in coaching their voice, but they don't often get a chance to sing with the actual accompaniment.
Oh,
many voice teachers don't play. I mean, you have to play to a certain rudimentary degree, but a lot of them don't play to the extent that they can give you the actual piano part.
Okay, so one of the things that you do that sort of puts you at the, you know, gives you an edge,
yes.
Let's just say, is that you can open the score
yep.
and play the
and
whole
play
thing.
It.
And play it
yep.
in full, not just dong, dong, dong,
exactly.
dong, dong. Okay,
yeah.
Well.
Yeah,
that makes a big difference.
Yeah, and a lot. One of my students now, a man from Ireland, who's been here for many, many years, but all growing up, he always sang. I guess in Ireland, you know, everybody sings. The family all sings. They sing in the pubs, but he'd never sung with the accompaniments. He had sung. You know, we're talking even Irish folk songs, mm-hmm. but he also knows a lot of opera, and so he listened and sang along, let's say, with Caruso and the best of, you know, of the old records and this and that. But he had never experienced being able to sing and have the accompaniment live
mm-hmm.
and following him
oh.
instead of him having to follow a pre-recording.
Oh, I see.
You know, and, mm-hmm. and when you can do your own interpretation where he might decide to take something a little faster or slower, or this particular week he'll sing it one way, and then next week he might do it differently, but I follow him. And he has said that's just, it just opened up a whole new experience for him.
So that's interesting. See, the relationship between the person who's playing the instrument and the person that's singing is mm-hmm. Quite important.
Yes.
And, you know, sometimes you're... so you're saying that you, when you play, you're trying to follow that person? Not when you're teaching them, though.
No, right? But then when we're performing a song, I'm there to support the performer.
Okay.
And that's why not all fabulous pianists are good accompanists.
Okay.
Because a lot of classically trained, any instrumentalist really, is it's a solo thing and they are performing. They're performing the piece.
So it's the so in your as you think about it, when there's a singer mm-hmm. singing a piece that has piano accompaniment, it's mm-hmm. not the two of you performing.
Well, it is in a way. It depends. It also depends on the kind of music. For
yep.
example, if we're talking classically, Schubert, for example, is known for it being a partnership. It's not singer accompanied by a piano. If you hear some of his music, one of the easiest ones to talk about is Gretchen und Spinnrad, which is Gretchen at the spinning wheel. And the piano part actually creates the feel of the spinning wheel because it has this da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, which goes throughout. So it's a partnership in that case where the singer and the pianist together create the spinning wheel.
Hmm.
Then we'll get something, for example, a piano reduction of a Broadway score. And in that case, I'm like acting as the orchestra. And I pretty much have to follow the singer.
Okay.
If the singer skips a line, if the singer speeds up or slows down or whatever, a lot of my job is to cover.
So you're the cover-upper.
I'm the cover-upper. I'm the make them look gooder, you know.
You're the make them look gooder. Hey, yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
I could use one of those, actually. I mean, that's why people like to play with people that are, you know, people that listen.
Exactly. Yep. Because that's a big problem with some really trained, excellent pianists really don't know how to focus outside of themselves to really be following that other person rather than just emoting and doing it all themselves.
I want to play something. Does this sound... Hold on just a moment. Is it this one or is it this one? Do you hear something going on?
Not
there?
Much.
Ugh, I don't hear much going on either. Forget it then. Oh, I know what I did wrong. All right, forget it. I was going to play some of that Gretchen at the spinning wheel, but luckily this is what they call... Luckily, this is what they call community radio, so I can not get it right. Oh, wait a minute. Is this what
Gretchen.
You're talking about?
Yeah.
Let's listen to this.
Do you hear the piano part in the background? So the spinning wheel is just going round and around.
So the piano is the spinning wheel in that particular mm-hmm. case. Okay. You know, we could hear it because it was coming out the speakers of my computer. Anyways.
That's nice.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to give them a sample of what you were talking about anyway, so we finally made that happen. Mm-hmm. So we've been listening to these big, lofty sounds, but where the heck do you start? I mean, really, first of all, is there such thing as being tone deaf?
To an extent. So far, and if I'm counting correctly, I'm in my 36th year of teaching, 36 or 37 years. I've had many people come to me not being able to sing. Some the most serious issues. One man in particular was in his 40s, and all his life he had been told he couldn't sing in school. They said, mouth the words, don't sing. So he had 40 years.
They told him to mouth the words?
Yeah. So he had it all built up in his head that he couldn't sing. So he couldn't sing when he came to me.
Yeah.
He couldn't even match a pitch. So I thought, wow.
Yeah.
So I literally had to say, sing any note.
Okay.
And then let's see if we can sing the same note again. I'm not kidding. That is how really his mind had made it impossible. Anyhow, then he would say, sing a note, and I'd say, all right, now hold that note. I'm going to play some piano, and you just try to hold the same note. And I would play chords that would support that note.
Right, right.
And then we'd try another note, and then we'd try another note, and I would just play the chords that would match it and see if he could hold that.
What did he think of that?
He was willing to try anything, because he really, and the thing is, he wanted to play guitar. And so he wanted to sing and play guitar at the same time. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's a really hard combination if you have trouble holding a tune and you're just strumming along. Well, it turns out this was really not a success story, particularly on my part, because it turned out he just was so psychologically blocked on singing. It turns out by the second year of lessons, I made a recording of Oh Holy Night for him to take home and sing with for his parents.
Oh.
He had a beautiful voice in there.
Oh, okay.
Beautiful voice. And I really wanted to be a fly on the wall because his father apparently had been one of his worst critics.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying everybody is going to end up having this gorgeous tenor voice that this guy happened to have.
Yeah.
But on the other extreme, I've been able to help people modulate their voice. For example, I had when I lived in New York City, I had a large program of special education music. And the Down syndrome, particular people that are known for having a very monotone voice.
Mm-hmm.
And would very much, and I'm generalizing, but there are some generalizations you can make about that. And trying to sing usually was just, you know, just a straight low tone having nothing to do with the music. And I worked with a lot of Down syndrome, not just children, but adults as well. And to some extent, some of the kids and adults actually, once they were coached and really worked with it,
you're right,
they could sing.
And so other, up and down and not just
you know,
chanting
just
or something?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Not everybody, but I could help them modulate it so it wasn't always just one straight low tone. So I really don't believe in tone deaf. I don't believe in it because I haven't encountered it, and I think I would have by now.
Okay. So when people say doop, it's just they're not ready to, or if they want it, maybe if they went out and pursued
and had somebody that could help them, because I know in my own experience, when I was first out of college, I taught in the preparatory division, and again, I taught voice and piano and had some special needs, and I ended up, any teacher that had a student that they didn't know what to do with, they would call on me, and one of the teachers, this poor girl, again, just could barely change notes, and this woman was giving her the, all these exercises, and the poor girl was just singing, so she didn't have the right coaching. Then she came to me and we simplified, and so she had some success. So it's a combination. You can really want to learn, but if you can't find somebody that can help you do that, you may be stuck.
Yeah, well, I can imagine that. Hey, we're listening to, I'm Steve Kerrigan. This is Local Folk. We're listening to Terry Ilaria, and she's a voice coach who's lives really close by to me. I feel so lucky to have met her. And I'm going to play, she's going to teach me how to sing even better.
Okay.
All right, I hope. Yeah, I'm sure of it after all this. But I want to play another song that you've sang, and it's called What Difference Does It Make? Please tell me about that, because you didn't just sing it, right? Mm-hmm. There was more to it than that.
Right. A friend from the theater came to me, a friend of a friend, had some, I call it chicken scratch. It was some music that his grandmother had written in the 1920s for some musical. And all that was remaining was, the melody line, little tiny notes with the words underneath it. No counting really indicated. So I started with this bare minimum of words and a tune, absolutely no chords to go with it. But, excuse me, knowing that it was from the 1920s,
okay,
musically, it was going to be pretty obvious which chords I should choose. If it had come from, the 1990s, it could have been very, very unusual chords. It was going to be pretty standard.
So you must have studied different types of music.
Sure.
Or you studied theater, did you say?
Theory and musical theater.
Theory and music. So it's sort of like when I went to art school, they taught me art history. You had to take
music history.
Mm-hmm. They said, well, back in the 30s, it would have been structured kind of like this.
That's exactly right. Because if we jumped ahead to the 50s, everything would match Duke of Earl. It's the same four chords, heart and soul. Once you get into the 50s and early 60s, again, I can pretty much tell you what chords you're going to use. And that's one of the, I'm digressing here, but that's one of the reasons when the Beatles came along, they branched out beyond those four chords that was real popular. In the 50s and early 60s.
Well, I mean, it seems like these. Okay, so that's one of the things that made them special and unique.
Yeah, because you'd kind of go, whoa, what was that? Instead of it always being the predictable four chords. So again, being in the 1920s and 30s, it was going to be a lot of those four chords. And anyway, so if another time I'll find the original chicken scratch that I had. So anyway, this actor friend asked if I could arrange it.
Okay.
So I wrote it out, and I, made up the chords and all of this, and, it was, of course, he was.
And did you figure out the swing of it as well?
Yes.
I mean, is that?
Yeah, you'll hear it on this, because the biggest compliment I got when I recorded this, which is what I was going to say, when I went to hand the music to this friend of mine, he said, okay, when can we go to the recording studio? I'm like, excuse me? So not only did I arrange it, but I sang it and played the piano to it. And one of the biggest compliments I got from the technician after we recorded this particular one, there's a piano solo in there, and he goes, I hope this doesn't offend you, but that really reminds me of the way my grandmother used to play. And
well,
I went,
that's great, isn't it?
That's what I said. I said, perfect. That's exactly what I was trying to do. So it's a very dated kind of song, but it is just the most charming. And even the way I chose to sing it, I don't use my full classical voice on it because that wouldn't fit the style.
Okay. This is great. Okay, so listen for all that, you listeners out there. It's called What Difference Does It Make? You're listening to Local Folk, and we'll be right back.
A maiden fair, a man who was in love.
right. What difference does it make? That was great. Listen, I want to let everybody know that programming on Portsmouth Community Radio is made possible by you, our members, and by the Seacoast Growers Association, presenting farmers markets in the Seacoast region for 32 years. With local produce, 32 years, that's before it even got cool. With local produce, meats, prepared foods, garden plants, and handcrafted goods, seacoastgrowers.org. I should also let you know what's going on musically. Except that I don't have a very good... well, I'll tell you what. I told you about the Scarecrow Ball. I think you should do that. That's next Saturday, and it's at the VFW on Deer Street. Doors open at 7:30. Dress like a scarecrow. You could get an awesome prize. Dress like a really awesome scarecrow, or just dress like maybe a regular scarecrow, but be the best dancer there. And you could probably get some kind of excellent prize. And there's going to be scarecrows all around town. What a way to get into the spirit. I'm with Terry Ilaria, and she is a voice coach. She's the voice coach. She's soon to be the voice coach of the stars, because she's actually going to coach me, I think, to the star. To the star to be. That is correct. The star to be. You will see. You will even hear it in my broadcasts here, I'm sure. But what you could hear, not necessarily from me, but just to get back to it, is you said that you did this last song, What Difference Does It Make, in a different voice. So let's talk about voices. First of all, what's a voice that is the exact opposite of like an opera voice? I mean, do you know what I mean?
I do.
Like, what's the least kind of a voice that you could have? Is there such thing, or?
Rap. Because it doesn't qualify as music. Please don't write in. Okay. Well, it is, because seriously, it is, because that is more of a, not classical chant, but it is. It's a repetitive. It's a more spoken than.
It's a more rhythmically spoken thing. So that's before you would put actual notes into it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But there's still probably, you could rap like this if you wanted to.
But
and rap
they
like
don't.
This.
Yeah. Yeah. Know? That's a pitch difference, but you stay there.
Yeah.
Because usually in rap, you don't get, at least in the limited amount that I've heard.
Yep. Okay.
You don't get a lot of difference. It stays in one place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think I've ever heard any that was all up high. It seems to be pretty low, but it is mostly just rhythm and percussion.
It's percussive and rhythm.
Yeah.
As a classical person,
mm-hmm.
How do you feel about rhythm instruments?
More cowbell. No.
More cowbell.
In their place. Yeah.
Okay, so you don't need to have drums.
No.
Okay.
You noticed in Gretchen Springerod, you did not have drums.
No.
You had a piano and a singer.
I heard a piano and a singer, yeah. And my voice coach is, oh, I love the drum. It just has its time and place. I'm like, give me my drum.
Yes.
We got a drum. I want to bang on my drums. Okay, so you're saying, you know, so at that point, you know, it's qualifying as music because it's this rhythmic chant and whatever else. So then you start adding notes.
Mm-hmm.
But,
Well, there's also the tone quality, let's say. So like I was saying, for What Difference Does It Make, it's from the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very light, fun, I'm trying to think of a better word, but I don't use my full classical voice with it.
You can tone it down.
Yes.
Okay.
Not all opera singers and whatnot can.
Okay.
Some people have a big vibrato, that's mm-hmm. the vibration of your voice, and they have a hard time controlling it. And you can even say, all right, let's try that without vibrato, and you get, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot of control to be able to use your vibrato correctly and to be able to straighten out your tone. For example, when you sing in a chorus, when I sing in a chorus, we have to blend. I'm in the Seacoast Community Chorus in York. And we have, at this point, I think we have about 60 people in the chorus. It's non-auditioned, but there are a number of professional singers. But we have to not use our big professional voices, because in a chorus, you don't want to hear, oh, there, I can hear Terry. Oh, I can hear this person.
Right.
I can hear that person. And not all of the professional singers are successful in being able to blend.
Right.
And so that's one of the jobs in the chorus is... That's something that they need to learn how to do.
Try to bring it back. So that's
one
of the reasons to maybe be in a chorus, is to learn to blend.
Yes, because you want to, well, as a well-rounded musician, mm-hmm. you want to be able to do that. Again, some soloists, and it can be really in any instrument, but singers are especially guilty of this, is they don't want to blend.
They don't want to blend.
You know, they want you to hear them.
Yes, yes.
So it's an ego thing. It's it can be a personality thing.
Yeah.
And singers are, you know, because if you're a soloist singer, that's what you're up there doing, is you're showing your fabulous talent and your voice.
Yeah, you can't be apologetic about it. I mean, you have
right.
to get up there and say, hey,
this is it. This is me.
It. This is me.
But when you're in a chorus, if you choose to be in a chorus, yeah. you need to be able to say, okay, right now, I'm not a soloist. I'm a member of the soprano section.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I've done a lot of conducting. I want to keep my mouth shut. I'm there to be a singer. I'm there to be a chorus member. I'm not the conductor. I might not agree always with what's doing or what the accompanist is doing. I do a lot of accompanying. I'm not the accompanist there. That's not my job. So I have no, I don't.
So you're never acting as accompanist you never act as conductor when you're accompanying.
That can happen. Anytime I do musical theater, it's both, because
okay.
I conduct from the piano.
Okay.
And actually, in the earliest music, the conductor was playing the keyboard.
In the earliest music?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes. In Baroque, I mean, it was always the keyboard player was the conductor.
Oh, I see.
You know, the
okay.
harpsichordist and all that.
Yeah, I always wonder about that, you know, like, you know, is the singer following what's laid down by the instruments, or are they countering that, or, you know, what are they doing sometimes?
Depends on the music. If we're talking opera, the opera singer really has to stick to the score.
Yeah.
You know, because again, if you have the orchestra, you can't go changing your mind on you know.
You can't go and jam?
No. Nah.
I just added that little vocal jam right there.
You
I
don't mind,
that
do you?
Really, that sounded really good.
Really good there, yeah.
So somebody that is singing, let's say the Star Spangled Banner in a really highfalutin way like they do nowadays with all kinds of extra stuff added in, is that like the same as opera, or is that not even, you know?
Well, first of all,
is that a different level? Is that, where would you throw that?
When people sing the Star Spangled Banner, I will get on my soapbox for just a moment.
Okay, please.
They should sing the Star Spangled Banner. Okay?
That's how I feel. Yeah. Okay, this is what.
Okay, because, and again, I was just talking about singers and their egos and their all of that. But when you sing the Star Spangled Banner, it's not about you.
Right.
It's our country. It's our national anthem, and you have no business doing all of the acrobatics, the vocal acrobatics. I've seen it sometimes with a choir doing harp, beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But the people that, I mean, you can't even tell what the melody is because they don't even get to the, oh, say, before they've, you know. That's inappropriate.
That's inappropriate.
Yeah.
But isn't America the land of individual liberties?
Sure. But but the Star Spangled Banner, in my opinion, is not a vehicle for that.
It's supposed to be a unifying thing.
Sure. You know? Yeah. And we all should be able to sing it together. And if somebody is making it into a show off solo,
yep.
that's not a country's unifying song.
But you can so there is some sort of difference between you. So it's sort of like so when you teach me how to sing, by the way, I can't sing any vibrato.
That's okay.
Yeah. Can I learn?
Mm-hmm.
But then it's like with great power comes great responsibility. Is that what you're...
Well, the thing with the vibrato, though, actually, it should be a natural vibration. It's not like I'm going to say, here, do this.
Mm-hmm.
It's if you connect to your breath correctly and support it, and that the vibrato should develop naturally.
It should just happen?
It will. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, that's good. I'm going to take your word for it because you're the teacher. All right.
Well, then we can do a recording and bring it back, and you can play it on the air.
But if it just naturally happens, then you still need to be able to naturally stop it as well, though,
to
right?
To control it, yeah.
To control it. Mm-hmm. So once you let it naturally happen, then you'd have to learn how to figure out how to control it.
Yeah. Well, let's say, for example, I have a godson who's 3 and a half now. Mm-hmm. When he was an infant, I made a CD of lullabies for him. Would that sound like ridiculous? Twinkle, twinkle, you know.
Yeah.
So if you listen to that and then you listen to my recording singing the Messiah with the string orchestra, you're going to think that's the same person. But it's been, you know, I've been singing all my life. It doesn't always come naturally. It's harder for some people than others. It's almost impossible for some singers, whether it's because physically they can't or mentally they don't want to hear themselves singing without that vibrato, you know. So there's all sorts of different situations. You know, there's no one answer. There's no
right.
But everybody's.
But you've worked
different.
With people like me before.
I've worked with, yes.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. All right. Listen, I'm going to play another song, and then I also just want to talk about how, you know, the different ways that people can get involved in mm-hmm. singing if they've always sort of wanted to, or I'm not mm-hmm. exactly sure what. But I want to play this song first, Plenty Good Room.
Oh.
You know, this is the Seacoast Community Chorus. I mean, that might be a place where people could get involved if they
yes.
wanted to.
Yes.
Okay.
And this is, it's a spiritual, it's arranged for... Four part chorus, the mixed choir, soprano, alto, tenor, bass, and then the soprano solo, which kind of floats around the top. And again, it's a live recording, so keep that in mind.
Okay. All right. Well, this is Plenty Good Room, and you're listening to Local Folk right here on Portsmouth Community Radio. We'll be right back. Choose a seat and sit down. Plenty of room. Plenty of room. And that was by the Seacoast Community Chorus. And that super high voice that you heard up there was Terry Ilaria. And she is here with us tonight. She's a pianist and a singer. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you, do you have a website or do you have anything like that? Or are you? Is it word of mouth? Is it people?
It's been word of mouth.
Yeah.
I've been here. I moved here from New York 22 years ago.
Okay.
And it's been word of mouth for the last 20 years.
Okay.
Because I started doing a lot of musical theater.
Yeah.
And attracted, when I'm music directing a show, mm-hmm. I have to teach everybody all of their parts, all the music, and then I play for the show, and I'm the conductor for the pit band and all of that.
Okay.
And I got a lot of adult students that way because they'd say, oh, well, you know, can you help me out with this
sure.
or that? And then the same thing with the kids and the teenagers. You know, word gets around, your friend's taking piano lessons. Who's their piano teacher? You know, so I really haven't advertised in forever.
Okay, so we won't do any advertising. But But
if you want to get in touch with me.
Okay. All right. Please let us know then if you'd like to.
I'd love to. Okay. I don't have a website. I have an email and I have a telephone number.
Okay.
How old fashioned is that?
Very. It's probably one of those phones
with the
rotary.
Dial. Yeah, rotary. No answering machine. No. And it's a party line. No.
Okay. It's a party line. Yeah. If anybody knows what that is, then.
Yeah. So I think what I'll do is I'll give you my email address.
Email. That's a great idea. Okay.
Okay.
What is it?
It is the letters RMUSICSMMS at AOL.com. So again, it's R, the capital, the letter R, music, and the letters are SMMS. That was the original name of my studio, which is the Steinway Memorial Music Studio.
Okay.
Which I now just call Steinway Music Studio, and it's not named after the piano.
Okay.
It's named after my cat.
Oh, okay.
Who was, yes, black and white. So please, if you have even just any questions and would like to just chat, you're not obligated to anything. I love talking to people and... Just shoot me an email and let me know what you'd like to know, vocally, piano-wise. I accompany, taught at UNH for 6 years and accompanied every instrument known to man, so or woman, excuse me, known to people.
Well, I look forward to it. I mean, I look forward to working with you, and thank you very much for having been on the show,
Well,
Terry.
Thank you for inviting me. This was exciting.
You're welcome, and I'm just going to leave. We're going to transition over to Under the Radar, and the theme today is?
Well, this is the soul edition.
The soul edition.
Right.
Okay, the only edition.
James Brown.
Oh, okay. And we're gonna leave you with Terry singing I'd Rather Leave While I'm in Love. Let's do that. We'll see you next week on Local Folk. Thanks a lot.
Still believe the meaning of the word. I'll keep my dreams and just pretend that you and I were never gonna end. Too many times I've seen the rose die on the vine. Somebody's heart gets broken, usually it's mine. I don't want to take the chance of being hurt again. And you and I can't say goodbye. So if you wake and find me gone, just carry on. You see, I need my fantasy. I still believe it's best to leave while I'm in love. Chance of being heard.